Oh, there you are. I wonder where you'd gone. Sorry.
Took the opportunity to escape.
I thought you'd run away, that's quite right. Right, we're all ears.
I'll just deal with the procedural matters first. Yeah. And I propose to submit a memorandum by the end of this week, just dealing with procedural matters so that you can then respond to that.
Thank you.
So, firstly, I do seek leave to submit my closing legal submissions in writing, and I'm proposing to do that by the 19th of May.
Was that 1-9?
Yes. Yes, I noted there are a couple of sets of legal submissions which have been promised during the course of the hearing, which haven't yet eventuated. So I'm assuming that will give me sufficient time, and I'm eager to see Kiwi Rail's explanation of how they're not caught by the Waikato decision.
Eager might be overstressing it, might be. Yes. The 19th is fine, by the way. I mean, we're heading up to PC9, obviously, away from Hamilton on the 22nd, so we're not going to be doing terribly much between the 19th and the 22nd.
So the second procedural matter is you asked us for a roadmap in terms of consultation on the changes to the commercial zones. So we propose to put that forward in the memorandum as well. And having heard from Mr. Allen, there doesn't seem to be any disagreement between us in terms of this not being a legal scope issue, but being a natural justice issue. And he didn't seem to have any particular issue with us undertaking some further consultation about this. So our proposal is essentially that we will provide public notification of the relief sought by Kāngaroa in terms of their 24.5 metres and the alternative proposal by council. We will provide a feedback form so that interested persons can provide us with their view, which proposal they prefer and reasons. We may also hold some public information sessions because the council's found that's particularly useful as part of that process. And then we would propose to report that feedback back to the hearing panel, and we'll specify a date for that, but I'm suspecting in the order of about 6 weeks or something of that nature for this process to take place. And then, of course, we envision it that it would be for the hearing panel to decide whether you wanted to actually hear from those people or whether you were content with the feedback that was provided.
Yep. That's good.
So we'll propose that in the memorandum so that those directions can be made.
Yeah. And you don't need any formal direction from us on that, do you? Have a think about that. If you think it would be helpful, then just let us know.
Yeah, I am proposing to submit it by memorandum, and with, of course, the effect that will go to all the other parties, so it might be appropriate for it to be just confirmed following that.
Yeah, okay.
So leaving aside the procedural matters, my intention today is just to give short verbal submissions on some of the key issues that we've covered. I don't intend to deal in depth with matters of detail. We'll address that fully in our written submissions. So the first issue I want to return to is policy 3D. And just to recall that all parties are agreed that policy 3D is the correct policy basis for assessment as a result of the Amendment Act. And consequently, that the key issue is, in the words of policy 3D, within and adjacent to town centre zones, building heights and densities of urban form commensurate with the level of commercial activity and community services. Both the council and Kāngaroa agree that it's not appropriate to take a short-term approach, for example, the 10-year life of the district plan, but a more appropriate approach to this question is in the order of 30 years. As you've heard in the evidence, the council's assessment of policy 3D for the next 30-year period supports a medium density level of development in Cambridge and Te Awamutu town centres. And our submission is that this level of development is reflected by the heights and densities proposed in Plan Change 26 as amended by the Council's alternative proposal. The Council's assessment is also consistent with the Future Proof Strategy 2022, which has now been incorporated into Change 1 to the Waikato Regional Policy Statement. And in our submission, while the Future Proof Strategy is itself a relevant consideration, the weight to be given to it increases once it is incorporated into RMA planning documents, in this case, Change 1. Conversely, it's the Council's submission that the heights and densities sought by Kaingaura in the commercial zone and in their proposed high-density residential zone do not reflect levels which can be considered to be commensurate within the next 30 years, and in fact represent a spatial application of development capacity so far in excess of demand that it has the potential to undermine the well-functioning urban environment that is the objective of the MPSUD. However, the Council accepts that it would be appropriate for the height limit in the Leamington Centre to reflect its subordinate role to the Cambridge Town Centre. And in that respect, the Council would seek a height of 16 metres in the Leamington Centre to enable construction of 3 or 4 storey buildings, rather than the 4 to 5 storeys to be enabled by the 18 metre height in the Cambridge and Te Awamutu Town Centres. Turning to the infrastructure overlay. In my submission, there is no doubt that the level of development that is enabled by the NDRS, which without qualifying matters is 4.5 times the existing level of development, cannot be accommodated by the existing water and wastewater infrastructure and will lead to adverse effects on the rivers and streams, which is inconsistent with Te Ture Whamana. It's the Council's evidence that these effects can only be avoided by the provision of infrastructure in an integrated, forward-planned manner, which involves focusing infrastructure investment on areas that best achieve the objectives of the MPSUD and which will, over time, provide for more efficient use of three waters and roading infrastructure. Planning for 2 dwellings per site across the wider residential zone, with infrastructure investment planned to achieve this, and by using the infrastructure overlay to require applications to exceed 2 dwellings per site to satisfy the Council that there is sufficient capacity in that location, that local upgrades can be provided, or that on-site measures can be taken to mitigate demand. That's the Council's approach. Mr. Jagger for Kaingaura suggests that Council can respond to development in a reactive way by providing infrastructure in response to demand. Mr. Steenstra for Cogswell appeared to suggest that Council could provide infrastructure in between consent being approved and development taking place. I submit that neither of those approaches represent integrated management of natural and physical resources as required by the Act. And that type of approach would result in local upgrades which are tacked on to existing systems without providing the core infrastructure upgrades which are needed to support the level of centres of intensification that's planned for the long term. And you've heard that from Mr. Coates again today. just as I will just briefly address the request of Craig Shearer for TA Projects Limited in terms of providing an exemption from the restricted discretionary activity rule for three dwellings within the infrastructure overlay, where the subdivision consent has addressed the three water servicing. There are a number of difficulties with that approach, some of which Mr. Coutts has discussed with you this morning. And one is that there may be many instances where developers of land within the grid cells do not want to provide for three dwellings on every site, which, in the absence of the infrastructure overlay, they would be obliged to do. In my submission, it's more likely that there will be defined locations within a proposed development where three dwellings is appropriate, but other locations within the subdivision which, due to site-specific factors, are more appropriate for one or two dwellings. And again, that's Mr. Coutts has addressed you on that this morning. So just turning then to the stormwater overlay. Now, as we've said previously, in essence, the stormwater overlay is a stopgap measure which is designed to ensure that the additional development enabled by the MDRS does not occur in locations that are affected by overland flows or which will potentially exacerbate upstream or downstream stormwater effects. While the council has an existing collection, and I'll attempt to say an eclectic collection of provisions in the district plan, the Stormwater Bylaw and the Building Act, these provisions have at times proven insufficient to prevent inappropriate development under the current one dwelling per site setting, and in the council's submission are insufficient to protect the additional development enabled by the MDRS from the potentially significant effects of natural hazards. You've heard that the council intends to prepare and notify a plan change regarding natural hazards, and it seems that it's not alone in that intention. That plan change will address a number of the issues that have been identified in the course of this hearing, including whether high-risk flood zones or overland flow paths should be mapped within the district plan or outside of the district plan, and also whether the appropriate return period for flood mapping should now be updated. And you noted that that was a matter that was supported by Mr. Coutts, but nevertheless hasn't been pulled through to the provisions because it would make the current development rights more restricted. So we've taken the view that Waikanae prevents us from achieving that now. We would look to achieve that as part of our plan change, specifically addressing natural hazards. Now, the commissioners have questioned whether the appropriate modification of the MDRS is to amend the site coverage limit from 50% to 40% within the stormwater overlay. And Mr. Chapman and Mr. Coutts today have provided some more information about the difference between those two settings. Mr. Chapman, in his evidence, has acknowledged that he can't guarantee that 40% site coverage will not have adverse effects in terms of displacement, as these effects have not been comprehensively modelled. However, the 40% site coverage reflects the existing site coverage in the residential zones. In his example today, he showed you that the existing coverage in that sample area was actually closer to 25%. If we increase the amount of development that's enabled, it may in fact increase closer to the 40%, but the Waikanae decision would prevent us from putting the trigger anywhere lower than 40. So there is a degree of pragmatism in choosing the 40. That is the most that we can do as part of this process to try and ensure that the additional effects can can be properly assessed. So Mr. Alan Fakaiamora has submitted that the redevelopment of sites to a multi-storey configuration may in fact reduce the current site coverage. And if that's the case, either the 40% won't be infringed and no consent will be required, or a restricted discretionary consent will be able to be obtained as a result of on-site measures. Now, I submit the 40% site coverage control will also play a role in encouraging developers to reduce their site coverage, as well as provide the council with an opportunity to record any proposed on-site measures as conditions of consent to ensure that they are maintained in the long term. And I do just want to refer to a part of the evidence for Cogswell surveys. And on, hasn't got page numbering, but on the second page, she's recorded, "I comment that if the site is outside of a high risk flood area, not obstructing an overland flow path, and not within the modelled 100 year flood event, then the buildings are not filling in a floodplain and can therefore tolerate a higher site coverage of 50% as per the NDRS provisions." That is exactly what we're doing. We're only controlling it to 40% where it's within that one in 100 year flood area. If you're outside that, you can go up to 50%. So yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do with these provisions. I acknowledge that it is a stopgap, and that hopefully the flood hazard plan change will actually provide, I guess, a more comprehensive approach to this issue. And obviously other councils have decided to just hold up the IPI process to try and allow these types of plan changes to catch up, whereas we've actually promoted it as a qualifying matter that will enable us to make those appropriate assessments, which can then be picked up in a more comprehensive plan change in the future. So just turning very briefly to character clusters. You've heard from a range of submitters, some of whom are passionate about retaining the character of Cambridge and Te Awatū, and some of whom think their property is no different to other streets in the town. However, and as Ms. Hill has confirmed this morning, the reality is that Plan Change 26 enables a significant increase in intensification within Cambridge and Te Awatū, which will, over time, change the character of the towns. This is the best opportunity to recognise and protect small, coherent clusters that represent themes from the past for Waipa's towns. I submit that Ms. Hill's report provides the site-specific assessment required by Section 77L to support the need for a restricted discretionary activity rule for any additional development proposed within these clusters. Certainly our preference, and in terms of the readability and workability of the plan, it would have been better if we had been able to use the character cluster provisions consistently, and that will obviously be something that we would look to achieve in the future. In the meantime, I submit that the modifications to the NDRS made by Plan Change 26 in respect of both character clusters and the character cluster qualifying matter overlay are the minimum necessary to accommodate the qualifying matter in light of the limitations imposed by the Waikanae decision. So just finally, a general comment about submissions. The Council has appreciated the input from submitters, both national and local organisations and local landowners, and we have endeavoured to consider and take on board those submissions as much as we can in this process. We don't believe that Kaingaora speaks for its neighbours, and it's good that a number of those neighbours have attended to speak for themselves. And in some cases, we appreciate the efforts that those submitters have gone to be here in person. And my submission, I'm going to take the hint and then wind up there. I urge you to make Plan Change 26 appropriate for Cambridge and Te Awamutu, both in terms of its centres and in terms of the values that the community seeks to protect.
Thank you, Ms. Emily.
Just one thing. You talked about the stormwater overlay as being a bit of a stop measure, and then you went on to talk about the character cluster saying that, you know, ideally you would be able to take a consistent approach and have a more comprehensive approach. Are the provisions for the character clusters then something in a similar nature, that they're a bit of a stopgap approach until you're able to produce something or do a separate plan change that takes a more of a comprehensive approach, or have I conflated the two there?
Yes, as I understand it, certainly the council's preference would be for there to be a consistent approach to character clusters. However, following the Waikanae decision, we accept that that will need to form a separate plan change, which will of course provide an opportunity for appropriate peer reviews and submissions, etc. However, it is important that the qualified matter be applied in the meantime, because obviously the development of two three-storey buildings, or potentially three three-storey buildings within those character clusters, would have significant effects on the character values, which obviously can't be returned once they're gone.
And then just a second point, just in relation to Waikanae, I'm not sure whether you're aware, but that has been appealed. And I understand that a priority hearing is going to be sought for that. So obviously, while at the moment the Environment Court decision is the Environment Court decision, given that we don't close this particular hearing because we're coming back for financial contributions, if a decision comes out later on from the High Court, is that something we're going to need to readdress again through submissions?
I am proposed to make my submission in the alternative. So in the written reply, I'll provide you with either option. I mean, obviously, for example, for character clusters, if we are able, our preference would be to use the same character cluster provisions for all of them. Mm. Obviously, if we are not, then we've provided you with the alternative route. So given the uncertainty, mm. I propose to just provide both alternatives.
Thank you.
And can I just check with you, when you said, I think you, with respect to character clusters, you said that what's in front of us is the minimum. Did you mean minimum in terms of numbers and quantity, or what were you thinking was the minimum?
Sorry, what?
I think you said it was the minimum necessary for a QM.
Not the minimum, yeah. It's really the same point that I was just making. Our preference, obviously, would be to be able to assess any development on those sites to ensure that they're consistent with the character of the cluster. In fact, all we've been able to propose is to assess the effect of the second or third dwelling on those sites. Mm. So hence, we don't think it goes far enough in terms of what's necessary to accommodate the qualifying matter, but it's the most that we can ask
okay.
for.
Okay. So, if I can just put it in a slightly different word, so it's the minimum protection that can be afforded at this point in time.
Exactly.
Moment. We're about to adjourn, but just before we adjourn, I understand we're going to have a closing, so thank you very much, Shane.
che ora stato cogliuto e detto ti fa ti dirà cammini ma non ti mando un interiore ma non ti muore ma ti fa una cucina o una quello che fa la cara è tua te ti dirà e non la ti ne ti ciò che ti dica o ti ne ciò che ti fa la te ne quanto ti ti ne lu ma ti ne poco fa quello ti manda lo ma tu cahare tu Mutta kaikki se kertoo, että mihin on kattia, että ei ole paikkaa ihan itse niin vaan. Hän ei ole siinä, ei ole kappia ollut laittamaan. So to bring to a close on behalf of one of you of Ngāti Hauga and Ngāti Koroke Kahukura, you are the very important today. However, they are relations, so we're all good. And also to bring with you the greetings from Chuck Davis, who opened your proceedings a few days back. He's also unable to come today. But I've come to bring it close to what is a significant discussion determining the way forward for the next 30 or so years for the residents within the Waitara district. And with the coronation, not but a few days ahead of us, the coronation of King Charles of Britain, I can't help but turn my mind to 1884 and the departure of the first Māori king to depart these shores. And that was the second Māori king, King Tawhia, having undergone 20 years of poverty created by the Crown, where they stole 1.2 million acres, including lands here and about. The King took it upon himself to go to England and seek an audience with Queen Victoria for the purpose of reminding her and hers of their commitment to the Treaty of Waitara. He approached the Queen with letters, and the Queen would not recognise the King, and he was turned away from her doorstep. That same Queen was responsible for initiating the King and the King movement here, and there's much to be investigated and spoken of in respect to that. But what he did say when he was turned away was that he had come to ensure that the treaty was embraced, and that we were keeping the treaty. He also spoke of coming to find friends amongst the Queen and her people, and finding none, then he would seek them amongst the lowly people of the world, the blacksmiths, candlestick makers, the shoemakers and others, the everyday folk. He also went on to talk about the need to come home and construct his own house. Mā kua no e hangai tōku nei whare, ko ngā pōua roto e mahoe e patate e hina. I will return to my home and I will build my own place, my own home. And that house would be made of the common woods of the forest, not of the lofty kings and lords, not of chiefs, not of leaders, but of building a place for everyday folk. From that day to this, and going on into the future, whatever decisions are made here are encapsulated within the saying, the Tumi Kura of the second Māori king. That if we are to build homes, let them be for everyone, but not for the exclusives. Let them be a space for all peoples to find place, home and space within this district and every other district we call Aotearoa and Te Waipono. That being said, before he left in 1884, he was very much vexed by the notion of travelling abroad on a foreign vessel, on the Kaipuke, on the sailing ships under an English flag, under a foreign power. And to that end, he spoke to all the chiefs throughout this area, throughout Pironia, and even down to through Pekuiti and further afield, to a little place called Maniaroa. We need our pass there, a little gathering place where there used to be quite a population there, where the chiefs of that place held one of the last traditional houses of learning. And he approached them, his heart feeling much anxiety at the notion of travelling abroad, as I mentioned. And as the people there listened to his anxiety, the people there, through their high priest, uttered these words, "Etama, O my son." Well, to them he was a boy. They were very much older than him. "Etama, kia hora te epaira, kia hora te marino, kia whakapapa pounama te moana, kia tere te kāwhiro, a ko tō hoa hai ko te rani mai." How so? It is all good. Kia hora te marino, may the peace be widespread. Kia whakapapa pounama te moana, may the oceans be as smooth as jade. Kia tere te kāwhiro, and may the promise of summer, the mirage dance before your countenance. Ah, ko tō hoa haere, ko te rangi mai. And may your travelling companion be peace itself. Ka haere, māwi atu, ka ki māwi mako. You will go as you are, and you will be returned in good health and good stead. And sure enough, he departed these shores, and was returned in good health. Despite not being able to get an audience with the Queen, other things came into place. But the point being is that these few words, kia hora te marino, kia whakapapa pounu te moana, kia tere te karohiro, a o to tātou wāhare wa te rangi māre, these are the words we need to close your meeting, your kui, your doings, the things that you say, with the notion too that the pitomata, the potentialities of what has been shared and agreed to and continue to be spoken of and melded and shaped as part of the future for this district will continue. And will continue with this travelling companion as you will, and that is only Māori peace and tranquility itself. Enjoy your ride home.
Go to Shane, thank you very much. Yes, excellent. Yes, nice story. And the present king, of course, will be more successful. Yeah, he's got an audience already. Yeah. Right, all right, well, thank you, everybody. We're adjourned now without date, obviously. And I look forward to receiving the paperwork in a few weeks' time. So, yes, travel well, everyone. Thank you.